Did you see the new article in The Lancet talking about 186,000 casualties, people who were killed in this conflict in Gaza? It's unbelievable, Scott. What's your take on this report?
That's from Lancet, the British Medical Journal, very reputable. I have nothing to dispute on those numbers. I can't say that I personally can vouch for them. I can't. But when you look at the level of destruction that's been inflicted on Gaza, systemic destruction of the totality of their urban environment, and you look at the fact that there's no place for this population to flee, that this population has been in the center of this destruction, having a number that big is not just a possibility, but a probability. The thing that shocks me is that the world hasn't jumped up and screamed. I mean, could you imagine if Russia bombed Kiev or bombed, Ukrainian cities and killed 186,000 Ukrainians, civilians? Russia slaughtered Ukrainian soldiers, but that's war. I'm talking about just a systemic carpet bombing, Dresden, doing to, what the United States did to Dresden, do what we did to any German city. Remember Bomber Harris and the American commanders. The Americans were a little bit more reticent about attacking German civilians, but at the end of the day, the decision was the German civilians are the ones providing the manpower to the factories they're trying to destroy. Therefore, collateral damage on civilian populations was not a bad thing because we demoralized them, we reduced their ability, we justified it, and we killed a lot of German civilians. Same thing with Japan. If you know, but then after the war, people came around and realized that actually it didn't have an impact on German industry. The Germans went underground, and it actually strengthened the will of the German people to resist. So killing civilians, look. The Israelis are seeing the same thing. 186,000 dead Palestinian civilians. Hamas is stronger. They're recruiting more people. The Israeli military admits that Hamas has won this battle, won this battle, has defeated the Israelis. Hamas dictates the pace of this conflict, and Hezbollah will do the same. Bombing doesn't defeat the people. It only strengthens their will because at some point in time, you stop thinking about death and you accept the inevitability of death. And once you accept the inevitability of death, you become calm and you're able to proceed forward. Horrible things happen. We've seen the horrible photographs, the girl's jaw blown away, half a baby burned, gagged up. But how many times can you see? You see that once and you're shocked. You're like, oh my God, that's horrible. Then you turn on the TV, you see it again. You go, I saw that. Oh, that's a different one. That's horrible. Turn on again. Yeah, I've seen that already. 8 months later, we don't care. Literally, we don't care. We're just immune to it because we've just been overwhelmed with it. Intellectually, we can't absorb more death. So this number that should shock everybody, people are just like, oh, okay, yeah, we know the Palestinians are dying there. Well, it's a tragedy. It's a huge tragedy. And it just shows the indifference of the West to the suffering of the Palestinian people. It's a great tragedy. And the fact is that Israel isn't being held accountable for these deaths is shocking. Absolutely shocking.
Yeah, that we've learned that the Israeli's major newspaper, Haaretz, and they're finally admitting that the IDF ordered the Hannibal directive on October 7th, and they were killing Israelis in order to not being captured by Hamas. How do you think that at the end of the day, what would be the outcome of this type of reporting on Netanyahu and his position and his administration, his party?
First of all, there's nothing shocking about this revelation. I wrote an article literally a few days after the October 7th attack. I called it the greatest military raid in modern history. And I said it's a military action, not a terrorist action. Hamas closed with and destroyed the Israeli Defense Force through firepower maneuver and slaughtered them, killing hundreds. And that the civilians that died didn't die by Hamas terrorism. They died because of irresponsible Israeli action. The vast majority of civilians killed on October 7th were killed by the Israeli military. The Israelis denied it, of course, because they had to create a counter narrative. They can't it can't accept that Hamas defeated them militarily. They have to say Hamas is a terrorist organization. So they manufacture things. And I know I can get in trouble for saying this. I don't condone rape. I condemn it with all my heart. But the Israelis have been talking about stories about mass rape that there is no evidence. Even the United Nations, in digging through the reports, say there is no evidence. We receive reports. People are telling stories. But there is no physical evidence of this kind of mass rape. They definitely didn't burn babies, behead babies, and do the things they were told. Did civilians die? Absolutely. I mean, there's some horrific photographs of as Hamas rolled through Israeli towns. They came up to critical checkpoints or you know, crossroads and set up roadblocks, and they killed people that approached the roadblocks. Many of the people they killed were civilians in nature. But you also have to point out at that time that they were also being engaged by Israeli security forces. And so they were in an active combat zone. You know, I'm not defending any action of this nature, but, you know, the American Marines set up roadblocks in Iraq and oftentimes ended up shooting Iraqi families fleeing the fighting who approached the checkpoint at a high rate of speed and ended up being killed. I'm not justifying, I'm saying that's a statement of fact. You know, if we can condone what the Marines did, or at least understand what the Marines did, then why can't we understand what Hamas did when they were in a similar situation, launching a military raid, which is what they were doing? The goals and objectives of their raid were to kill Israeli soldiers, capture Israeli soldiers, destroy Israeli infrastructure, and shock Israel into responding precipitously into Gaza, where Hamas was waiting for them. And we now see Hamas was prepared to fight this fight, and Hamas knew what it was doing. Hamas was sacrificing the Palestinian population because they knew that Israel would overreact. They knew that Israel would do exactly what they're doing. They knew that the result would be the isolation of Israel internationally and the projection of the necessity of a Palestinian state into the mainstream dialogue around the world. Nobody was talking about creating a Palestinian state on October 6th. Nobody. Everybody's talking about it today, and that's because of what Israel has done in Gaza, which was precipitated by Hamas's provocative raid on October 7th. But you know, Israel has tried to create this narrative: the slaughter of the innocents at the music festival. You know, they were all killed by Israelis. The Israeli security force came in, caught them up in a crossfire. I'm not saying that Hamas didn't kill some people. Of course, they did. There's horrific videos that show them around killing individuals, you know, but the bottom line is, you know, Hamas came there on motorcycles and hang gliders. The next thing you know, you have thousands of burned out vehicles. How did that happen? Well, not from Hamas. It was done by Israeli Apache helicopters that came in and just systemically slaughtered everybody to prevent the Hamas from capturing these people and taking it back and holding them hostage. Because look at the one thing that's the major thing that's bringing down Netanyahu right now is the unresolved hostage situation. There's over 125 Israelis still held hostage, and this is a huge political nightmare. Imagine if they hadn't invoked the Hannibal Directive and Hamas had brought in 800 to 1,000 hostages. The political paralysis that would be in Israel today. This was a big deal. This is why the Hannibal Directive exists, because Israel knows from experience when Hamas captured a single Israeli soldier and held him, that they were able to release him and get 3,000 Palestinians released in exchange, or a significant number. 3,000 is in my head, but I haven't checked it before speaking it, so I'll put a little caveat on that. But they said never again. Never again will we allow that to happen. So if Hamas has captured Israeli soldiers, we kill the Israeli soldiers. And much of, you know, it is hard to distinguish between civilians and military because the military was fully integrated into the various kibbutz structures that surrounded Gaza. And so, you know, taking out potential hostages required taking out civilians. The helicopters gunned them down. The tanks gunned them down. The soldiers came in and slaughtered them. The vast majority of civilians killed on October 7th were killed by the Israeli Defense Force. We knew that then. The Israeli media now is coming out and to say they've hinted at it. Remember, Haaretz and others have been interviewing people all along, early on, people, you know, as we were driven, hostages that were released, as we were being driven into into Gaza. We were being attacked by our head. I was wounded. My husband was killed. They were attacking us, people in the kibbutzes. We were killed by Israeli tank fire. Eyewitness accounts, but what they have now are documents that back this up. And there will be an inquiry someday, and all of this information will have to come out. And when it does, it'll condemn Israel and the Israeli command and the Israeli leadership in the worst possible way. Netanyahu's goal right now is to prevent that kind of inquiry by distracting the population into the possibility of expanded conflict, not just in Gaza, but in Lebanon. But this is a story that undoes the totality of the lies told by Israel after October 7th. It proves everything I wrote in my article that was written right after the October 7th events.
Scott, do you stick with that idea that Israelis didn't know that October 7th going to happen to them?
Well, let's ask this a different way. Did Israel know that the Egyptian attack on Yom Kippur in 1973 was going to happen? The answer is yes, of course they knew. They had the intelligence. They were receiving warnings from the King of Jordan. All the information was there. But knowledge isn't knowledge if you can't accept it as reality. And when the Israeli leadership was convinced that there was no way Egypt was going to launch such an attack because it made no sense, that Egypt couldn't win the war that ultimately Israel would win, and therefore Anwar Sadat would never commit to this course of action. So they disregarded the intelligence information, and then the attack came. After that attack, there was a major inquiry, and one of the things they found out is that the reports that were being written by the intelligence collectors never made it to the leadership, or they went through a filter, and that filter was infected with the Israelis called the conception, the conception of this reality. And when the intelligence came in, it didn't conform to this reality. The intelligence was either dismissed or reshaped to pass up to the leadership. So the leadership remained largely ignorant of the reality on the ground. So the Israelis created in their intelligence system a position they called the Doubting Thomas. And the Doubting Thomas's job was everything that was being generated from below before it got to a decision maker had to go across his desk. And his job was to challenge every assertion, make sure that they backed it up, that he wasn't going to allow the manipulation of intelligence or the furtherance of unsustained assertion to reach decision maker. If something went to a decision maker, it had to be fact-checked and be supportable by, viable data. I got to meet this guy. I worked with Israeli intelligence from 1994 to 1998. And on the issue of Iraq and Iraq's weapons of mass destruction, I got to meet him. We talked about the viability of Saddam. We talked about what Iraq was doing. I helped empower him to be even more restrictive on the intelligence flow, so much so that Iraq went from being the number one threat to Israel in 1994 to being about number six or number eight in 1998. And one of the reasons why that happened is that thanks to the Doubting Thomas, the Israeli intelligence service had to do a complete reassessment of Saddam Hussein. And he went from being an irrational dictator seeking to destroy Israel to a rational player who Israel could learn to live with so long as the weapons of mass destruction programs were eliminated and Israel was buying into the effectiveness of the UN weapons inspector. So the Doubting Thomas had a very important role. But then we started getting to the buildup towards 9/11. And then after 9/11, what Israel found out was that if you want to take action, the United States wanted to take action against Saddam. Remember, the British were told to fix the intelligence to the conclusion. The conclusion is that Saddam has weapons. Fix the intelligence to that. That was the British direction for their intelligence service. The CIA was pretty much told the same thing. James Clapper admits that when he was the head of the Geospatial Intelligence Organization, the guys who do photo interpreting, that his organization saw what they wanted to see. So they looked at a photograph, and instead of seeing what the photograph showed, they made the photograph do what they wanted it to do, that their prejudice influenced that, and that they put in deeply fundamentally flawed intelligence into the system to promote the idea of weapons of mass destruction. And Israel Israel had, Benjamin Netanyahu, and had intelligence leaders that felt that the Downing Thomas in that system was too restrictive, that the intelligence community was limiting the political options of Israel's political leaders, that there needed to be more flexibility. If you remember, and we had that same problem in the United States, Douglas Feith created this special unit in the Pentagon whose job was to cherry-pick intelligence to create a narrative supportive of the Iraq had weapons of mass, has weapons, and Iraq was linked to 9/11. Theory that deviated fundamentally from what the actual intelligence showed. Well, the Israeli intelligence, the new intelligence leaders wanted that flexibility, so they did away with the Downing Thomas. They did away with him. And now you have a situation where Israel begins to repoliticize its intelligence. And that's one thing that Israel, when I worked with them, they would never do. Their intelligence was above reproach. Wasn't always right. It's okay. Your intelligence is just human beings. Human beings make mistakes. The Israelis made mistakes just like everybody. But it was beyond reproach. It was done. If a mistake was made, it was a mistake made in good faith, as opposed to promoting or promulgating a lie, an outright lie. Now the Israelis were promulgating a lie. They lied about saying that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. How do I know it's a lie? I worked with them for 4 years and they knew what the truth was. They decided to put that inconvenient truth aside and start promoting things that they knew were false because they wanted to facilitate an American strike against Iraq that would remove Saddam Hussein from power because that became politically possible now with the new American leadership. So now you have this corrupt system in place. And once again, the conception emerges where political leaders begin to conceive the world they want, not the world that is. And when it comes to Hamas, which of course Israel helped fund and create, Israel always operated under the notion that Hamas was a tool to be controlled by Israel, and that one of the ways to control Hamas was through economic incentives. And in the lead up to the October 7th attack, Israel had opened up the crossings and allowed Gazans to come out, I think several thousand of them, given work permits. Come into Israel, work, earn an income, and bring that money back into Gaza, which helped the Gazan economy. Not fundamentally. I mean, we're talking about this is how narrow-minded the Israelis are. They think that they could buy off the Gazan population through a trickle of money, economic incentive. But the conception was Hamas, having allowed these work permits to go in, wouldn't do anything to disrupt that, because if Hamas did something to disrupt that, the Gazan people would turn on Hamas. That was the conception in the Israeli leadership. And so, as in the lead up to October 7th, you have the Israeli collectors on the ground. They're collecting the data. The Israelis are very good at intelligence collection, very good. They have human networks, they have the electronic surveillance monitoring phone calls, they have the satellite photos, they have video cameras everywhere. They are taking photos and it all comes in. But one of the things that happened too, because now you've taken the human element out of it, is that the Israelis started, it's a tremendous amount of data. I mean, I remember when I was in the Marine Corps, I was a combat intelligence officer. And, war is a complicated thing, but, like anything, you simplify it down to what you need to know, the essential elements of information, so that you can, in a timely fashion, assess, evaluate, and make recommendations so that the OODA loop, that decision-making cycle, observe, orient, decide, act, that you're inside the enemy's decision-making cycle, that the enemy's reacting to you and you will ultimately win. That's the way modern maneuver warfare works. The Marine Corps created something called the Surveillance Reconnaissance Intelligence Group. They consolidated all together, which is okay. I understand the thinking behind it. Except then they started pouring data in, because now you have this group, and it's not just some dumb lieutenant in a battalion with a lance corporal and a staff sergeant and a map with acetate, getting radio things and feeding off of that. No, that worked, by the way. We won wars doing this. No, now we have, a bunch of Marines together in an air-conditioned tent, receiving, internet-based flow of data. And they're sitting at a screen reviewing the data. It's too much data. How do you begin to process this? And they're flowing it. And so now decisions become more complicated because now the commander, thinks he can ask questions that really aren't that relevant, but he can throw questions out there, get answers, and the thing complicates, it slows down, it gels, it becomes just stupid. Platoon commanders used to lead the old-fashioned way. Get up front and die. I mean, sorry, that's what a lieutenant's job is in war. It's what a captain's job is in war. Lead by the front. And if you die, hopefully there's someone there who can replace you. You've trained your staff sergeant, gunnery sergeant well. And if they die, you got a sergeant that can do over. That's what a well-trained unit does. I was watching a video of a platoon commanders in Afghanistan in a firefight, with a laptop computer open, writing reports. Like, what the hell are you doing? Get up, get out, and lead. Go to your forward elements, call in the airstrikes, find out what's going on, dispatch, lead by example. That's not how we lead anymore, man. We got a computer and we're sending reports back and we're receiving intelligence information. I mean, that's what's happened here is we've decentralized this thing, we've complicated this thing. So the Israelis now, paralysis by analysis, too much information coming in. So they created an artificial intelligence algorithm that was programmed to receive this information and deliver probable outcomes. What Hamas would do, what could happen, what potentials are. So all this data is going in, all these humans are putting in this data, but the ultimate say, which used to be a guy like me handing it off to the Doubting Thomas who would review it using the human brain, the best supercomputer in the world, right here. And he would say, no, check, check, come back. Now it goes to a computer which has an algorithm designed to generate a response. The computer algorithm is not designed to say, BS, go back and do it again. It's designed to go click, 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 and here's a response, and the people give it. The Israelis were bragging about this. I think in 2021, they did a short little fight in Gaza, and they called it the first artificial intelligence war, where everything was done by artificial intelligence. The targeting's done. They can overlay, and we saw this. The Israelis have talked about they overlay, addresses, homes, where people live. They overlay it, and they can come in with a target. They can drop bombs here to achieve the certain results, et cetera. Everything's done with artificial intelligence. And so you have these young girls, because a lot of these units along the border are staffed by young girls. We saw that. We saw the videos of those girls cowering in the bunker, and tragically, most of them died when Hamas came in. Many of them were captured and taken hostage. One was released recently. Others are still being held. These girls, their job is to sit again in an office, but they monitor the cameras and they write reports. They can also do things just so people stop feeling sorry for them. They can control these remote-controlled machine guns. So that if Hamas comes through the gate, they can sit there like a joystick, fire on them and kill them. So they are combatants. But they're sitting there watching and writing reports going, hey, these guys are rehearsing an attack on this kibbutz. They've built a model of this kibbutz and they're rehearsing an attack. They send the report in, it goes into the computer. The Concepcion says, nope, Hamas wants that money coming in. And prints it out, and the leadership goes, ah, nah, don't worry about it. Dismissive. They're monitoring everything. Everybody's around there monitoring everything. The human intelligence networks are coming back. Hey guys, this is serious. We're getting reports from within. This is serious. The intercepts, this is serious. The visual, this is serious. All there, up to the point where they literally wrote a report on October 6th saying Hamas is going to attack tomorrow. A major attack. Hamas is coming over the fence tomorrow. Which should have had a watch officer go, cancel all leaves, red alert, red alert, red alert, man the FBF, get everybody online, get everybody up, get them out there on the wire, get everything up and running, get the helicopters up, get the airplanes up, get everything ready for when they come across. Repel borders. Nope. Instead, they went, let's call in the leadership. They say they're coming over tomorrow. Yeah, but what about the Concepcion? What's the computer say? The computer says, don't worry about let's go to sleep. We'll talk about it in the morning. That was the decision that was made. Let's go to sleep. We're not going to cancel leaves. It's a holiday. Let the people stay at home. Let's not disrupt the family celebrations. Let's not wake people up. They're all sleeping. Just we'll talk about it in the morning. The morning came, it was too late. Hamas was over the wire. Boom, it's done. Was this deliberate? Because that's the theory right now. Because, I mean, on the one hand, it's inexcusable because there's no doubt that they had the intelligence. Is this a deliberate act? Did the Israelis let this happen? I firmly believe no. Why? Because as despicable as the Israeli leadership is towards Palestinian life, and as indifferent they are to Israeli life under conditions like that which triggers the Hannibal directive, the lives of Israeli soldiers, the lives of Israeli citizens are precious to Israeli society. And there's no way in hell that any Israeli leadership would be so callously indifferent as to permit something like this to happen. First of all, they hadn't prepared for it. Again, if you're going to let something happen, you sort of want to be prepared for it. Israel wasn't prepared for this. It was a mass reaction, a panicked reaction that led to the disaster that exists today. This was something Israel wasn't prepared for. It was a huge political error, a huge strategic error. At least the chief of staff has been honest. He said, mistakes are made, and at some point in time, there will have to be an accounting, and I'm responsible. At least he was honest enough to say that. And I hope that there will be an accounting, and I hope he's held responsible. He and everybody else should be held responsible for what happened. This is a gross failure on the part of Israel politically and militarily. They should have been able to anticipate this attack and prevent this attack from being anything more than a bloodbath against Hamas. If this was handled properly, Hamas should have been slaughtered in their place. They should have canceled that damn music festival. I'm telling you right now, the Israeli Security Service was told that they're coming over the wire, and they let a music festival take place in Ground Zero. Who's to blame for this? The Israelis, 100%. Was this done deliberately? No. This is just one of the most colossal intelligence failures and leadership failures in modern history, and will go down as such.
But just to wrap up this session, Netanyahu gonna be in on 24th of July. He's gonna be in the United States talking with policymakers. And in your opinion, what he's gonna ask for in order to save his position in Israel?
I think this is more political than anything else. And Netanyahu's in a very precarious situation domestically at home. The United States is a major force in Israel. I think he's looking for political support. I think he wants to wrap himself in the American flag and come back to Israel and say, America is with us through me. If you jettison me, America won't be with you. He wants to get America to commit to Netanyahu, to say, Netanyahu is our man. This is the guy that we back, so that he can nullify potential political challenges to his leadership as the prime minister. I think that's the goal and objective, to try and secure guarantees of continued American support, and to be able to wrap himself in the mantle of America, to go back and tell the Israeli electorate, we can't survive without America, and America has picked me as being the guy that should lead Israel out of this problem. That's what I think he's trying to do, because otherwise, his ship has sunk. He's in horrible problems. If he doesn't come to America, he doesn't survive. And it's not a guarantee that he's going to get everything he wants in America. This is, in many ways, is a desperate gamble. His allies in Congress are many, and we already hear rumor about the Speaker of the House wants to ensure that he gets more than 55 standing ovations that he got the last time. That this will be a demonstration of American resolve and American support. We'll see. 186,000 dead Palestinians, though, is a number that may resonate with some people to stand up and oppose in opposition to Netanyahu's visit. So we'll see what happens. But what he wants is a major political commitment by the American political establishment that he, Benjamin Netanyahu, is the man that Israel must have to go forward.
Is he going to get their permission to attack Hezbollah?
No, I don't think the Israeli military is going to give him permission to attack Hezbollah. It's a suicide mission. And Hezbollah has been proving that point along. And the United States, has to reflect. At some point in time, we have to have responsible military leadership who tells the president, hey, if Israel goes against Hezbollah, there's nothing we can do. I mean, we can't stop the Houthi. We won't be able to stop Hezbollah. I mean, then we end up being embarrassed again. And frankly speaking, the Houthi weren't able to sink any American ships. We can't guarantee that Hezbollah isn't going to sink an American ship, and then we're in trouble. Now we got to respond and get involved in a ground war. And because you sink an American ship, man, Marines are coming in. Now we're in a ground war in Lebanon. That didn't go well last time we put Marines into Lebanon. And the other thing is Israel can't beat Hezbollah. And we know this. We know they can't beat. And the Israeli Defense Force knows they can't beat them too. So I think, again, Netanyahu knows this. His you know, going to war against Hezbollah is a gambit on his part to create the political conditions that make it impossible for him to be removed because he's a wartime leader. You don't change horses in the middle of a battle. That's why he's coming to the United States. He's coming to the United States to find an alternative mechanism to empower him politically that doesn't require him to go into Lebanon. He will, I believe, ultimately be called upon to accept a ceasefire in Gaza, which will bring about a termination of the hostilities, or at least the reduction of hostilities on the northern border so people can return to their homes. And at that point in time, logic would dictate that he would be ejected by Israel as a failed political leader because, of course, they lost the war. He promised the destruction of Hamas. That didn't happen. He had to back down from Hezbollah. The economy is shattered. But if he comes in waving the American flag and wearing the American flag, he's thinking that he can survive the end of this war. So that's why I think this visit to America is so important for him.